and welcome to episode 35. As always, joined live from Wells with the dulcet tone of, the real world outside his window. Kieran Masterton, how are you?
The real world.
The real world. I can hear it. It's no boy races today, though, sadly.
No, just the real world.
Just the real world, sort of tweeting birds and country idyll. The sound of country idyll.
Yes.
Yes. So since we last spoke, has the Coca-Cola truck been down Wells yet?
No, the truck did just trun down Wells.
Down Wells? Where
are you from? Where are we to you? Can't even get that right.
Is that not right? How do you say it?
No. Where are you to?
Is it where are you to or where are you to?
Where are you to?
But is it how many syllables in where? I thought there was one.
Where?
It's about three. Okay.
You.
You. Two.
Two.
Okay.
Cool. And how beyond?
How beyond?
Yeah.
If anyone's wondering what we're talking about, I think we did explain some of the geographical references in a previous episode. So have a check back for the Mendips versus the what was it?
Levels.
Levels. There you go.
See, I can't Somerset. That. We should do a whole thing on Somersetisms. We've said that before.
Well, you are the Somerset native, as we have. Well, that's not strictly true, are
not strictly true. I'm not born here. Just bred.
I was about to say bred and almost said inbred, but that would have been
easy.
That would have been so wrong.
I'm an incomer compared to some of these people here.
Yes, this is the Web Industry Focus podcast.
Yes,
more show, if in case anyone was wondering. But yes, we're back. Only one more show with this one, and then we'll be. It's the annual BAFTAs, the Back to Front Award Show.
Got my tux at the dry cleaners.
We should do that. We should do over the mics, over the Yetis, dressed in full evening wear.
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Do you own a tux?
No, of course not.
What would you do if you need one? Would you rent one? Seems a bit weird renting a suit.
I always think it's a bit odd renting a suit. Though I don't think I want to buy a tux because you don't really use it that often. There is talk of going to Cannes next year, in which case you probably do need a tux.
Would you go tailored? Would you go bespoke? Savile
would
Row.
I go bespoke? No, because I haven't got $4,000 to drop on a suit.
But do you think, would you get one off the peg? I mean, where would you go? Moss Bros.
I probably would end up renting one.
M&S.
Yeah, I probably would end up renting one. Though, if it's going all the way to Cannes, you're going to be away for a week or something, it might cost you quite a lot to rent it. I don't know.
It's the shoes.
This is fascinating.
You can never rent the shoes, and the shoes always make the outfit, I find. But anyways, so, have you been? Good?
Yeah, really good, yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. All set for Christmas?
Been up to Glasgow.
Glasgow?
Yeah.
That is the motherland though, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is.
Are you a Rangers or Celtic fan?
Neither.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you about to say there, what is, who, what?
No,
what,
no,
football?
I know what you're referring to, obviously. Ah, okay.
Obviously. No. What are you, Hibs?
No.
Aberdeen?
None of the above.
What's that one? Something
Park Queen of the Thistle,
Queen of the South,
no.
Montrose. Five.
Oh,
anyways,
this, as I said, this is fascinating.
It is. Anyways, moving on. We've got a cracker of a show today.
Anyone?
Well, you've decided to go all in, as the gamblers would say.
Yep.
On the VAT question.
Oh yes.
We'll do some light relief before then.
Fine.
Why don't I run through my two links and then.
Go on then.
You can go straight into the VAT question.
Well, I've got two links as well.
Oh, so you do. Oh, yes.
I've got three links. I've got two in one.
Oh, I see what you've done there.
Oh, I see what you've done.
I see what you've done there.
Really Somerset today.
I'm just trying to assimilate. You know, some people, they kind of subconsciously end up sounding like the other person.
You've been spending too much time with your daughter, haven't you?
She's not that bad yet.
No?
No, she did. Yes.
She'll get there. I'll keep coaching her
on the sly.
In the ways of the...
Yes.
Adding S's to the end of everything. Tesco's.
Anyways, moving on. So,
yeah.
My new catnip when it comes to downloading apps.
Oh, sorry, I thought you bought a cat then.
No, my new catnip. It used to be email apps. The search for the email
obsession.
App continues. On that note, I've gone totally back in the browser. I do not run an email app anymore.
I suppose that helps with the ability to close it down, actually.
Yeah. I've got them little pinned things with the little Gmail icons.
Do you use the tabs or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Oh, no, I don't actually, no.
No.
No, no, no. No, not got into those. But,
not a big fan.
But anyway, my new catnip is Markdown editors. No idea why, but when a new one comes out, which seemingly is as often as a JavaScript library these days, I'm straight on it. straight on it.
Tramp on chips, yeah?
Yes, down the Wells High Street.
Wells High Street.
But so there's a new one out from the guys at Real Mac, based down in, I think they're down in Brighton, aren't they? They do some very, very nice software. Famous for Clear, the iPhone app.
To do.
Originally. Yeah, sort of very nice and colourful sort of list app, I guess. But they've released a new one called Typed. And I thought I'd give it a go. And I'm actually quite impressed, to be honest. I've tried most of them over the years. I've tried ones that give you previews from, say, Sublime for the Markdown.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried, I always get it the wrong way around. Is it AI or IA? IA Writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone pro on that. But yeah, Type's got a few little innovations that I think make it really, really nice. There's, I'll just bring it up here. It's got a very, very nice icon as well. So you've got, you can have this thing called Zen Mode, which I haven't actually used, but it plays you a little music in the background to sort of ease you into your writing. It's kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
I'm sort of doing swirly motions with my hands now to sort of
indicate Zen.
What that would be like, Zen moment, yeah. But one of the things I found with Markdown, particularly with the IA Writer, is some of the markup that you get, and there may well be a setting, and please do tell me if there is, that things like quotes and they'll come through as the wrong quote. So when you want to edit it out as HTML, you can copy it as HTML. You have to go through and change the quotes and all that kind of stuff because it just doesn't work. This one, the output's really nice. The markup's really clean. But you've also got some nice touches. So you can change the background. You can have a cream, white, or black. You can change the font size. You can change the font for your sort of the text that you've got. Also highlights nicely things like headers when you do the double hash and things like that. So you can see those nice and clearly as well. It's just really nicely executed, to be honest. Nice and simple. Word counts in the title bar as well, which is often hidden away, and the character count also. So, yeah. And previewing is also really nice. If you sort of hover over the left hand side, you get a little pair of glasses, and you can click that, and it swipes in. And you can also set the style of the preview as well in the fonts and stuff like that. So, yeah, really, really nicely done. Quietly impressed. Because I think as software goes, you'd have to really think hard about, you know, how you can innovate on a basic Markdown editor and previewer. But there's some very nice touches here as well. There's another one though that came to my attention. I'm not sure if you saw, but there was Ghost. Remember Ghost? We've talked about them in the past.
Yes.
They've made their first acquisition. Well, I'm saying it's their first. I'm assuming so. Of their acquisition. They're buying up people. One called Room.io, which was a, I guess, another sort of online blogging tool where you could sort of launch a blog quite easy, and it had a very nice sort of tailored writing environment.
Really? They're buying people?
Well, I'm guessing they're buying. I'm guessing money changed hands.
Wow.
Room.io. And, the creator of that, there was two of them, a guy called Drew Wilson. Mm-hmm. You might know from the Pictos concert along... with many other things, but also Sam Sophus, who's a software developer.
Right.
I hope I've said that right. But he's also working on one called Whiskey, and that has a very, very nice icon, very reminiscent of the company that you once employed to do a graphic for you guys.
Yes.
And yeah, you can find that at usewhiskey.com, and that's got some really nice touches where it's got code highlighting because he's a Ruby guy and he wanted his Markdown to have kind of code syntax and highlighting and that kind of stuff. So I'm guessing a lot of that will be integrated into Ghost maybe as well. So yeah, it seems to be a burgeoning market for some reason. There's another one recently called Ulysses, which is a nice sort of writing app. Whereas these ones all allow you to save out the file locally, Ulysses is kind of a self-contained app where the files are stored within it, and you can sync those with iCloud as well for backup. So, yeah, I'm not really sure why people are, you know, it seems to be the new sort of battleground.
The new hotness is a bit, seems to be a bit of a, you know. You wouldn't have thought that there was that much scope. Do you know what
no,
I mean?
No, I agree. But, yeah, as I say, it used to be that I would... The Nirvana was the perfect email app, and now it seems to be for me the perfect Markdown editor because I do like writing Markdown. It's very, once you get to grips with it, it's very, very nice. The one thing that the one from Real Mac Type does as well, it allows you to sort of highlight things and quickly make them links, which there was probably keystrokes in most of them, but it's often a bit of a bother. So yeah, some really, really nice touches there. So definitely check that out, realmacsoftware.com/typed.
Yeah, I'll try that.
Yeah, use Whiskey also. Just you can download the beta. There's still a lot to come, but that also looks quite promising as well.
Cool. I'm a bit disturbed there's a massive ice cube in the whiskey, but we'll move on from there.
Well, you can, depending on your preferences, you can take, depending on how you set up whiskey, the ice will disappear.
Oh, that's good. That's
so good. You can have it with or without ice.
Nice.
Would you not like ice in your whiskey?
No, not at all.
Really? Would you have a splash of water?
Yeah, a dribble.
A dribble?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You'll have to agree to differ.
Okay.
But I'm not one for the scotch.
No, you're not.
Can't do it. Can't do it. Too many bad experiences when I was a teenager.
Well, probably slightly different scotch to the scotch you could drink now, I imagine.
I believe at the time Famous Grouse was the premier.
Lovely.
Premier blended whiskey.
Gross. Anyway.
No, Grouse.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, Grouse.
Anyway, go on then. VAT, come on, hit me.
You're right. This is going to be the most exciting show we've ever had, I think.
We can't talk about this all show either. We've got two other links, remember that, because we'll just rant. Honestly.
We will.
Yeah.
So we've talked about this already, you know, full disclosure. It's not, Keir and I have not, this is not new news to Keir, but this is, the news that the VAT rules about digital transactions are changing on January 1st.
E-services.
And it's a complete cluster.
Something. Insert or letter.
That Keir won't let me say on this.
Well,
podcast.
Actually, I'll tell you for why now. If you check in iTunes, we have a clean lyrics icon.
Do we?
We have a clean lyrics icon. And so, yes, you can't say that word.
No, but it's an absolute nightmare.
Family show.
It's fair to say. And there's been a lot of noise about this on the interwebs recently, which is interesting because the news was announced on the 1st of June and everyone seems to have ignored it. I think there was a few petitions to try and change the situation, but unfortunately they haven't come to fruition. So we're faced with some quite bleak implementation problems when it comes to the new VAT rules in the EU.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this is a bit of a dry topic, but it is actually quite important for anyone who's selling digital goods online. And it just so happens that both Keir and I work for companies that do that.
Well, yes, directly.
In different ways.
In different ways. One enables and one actually does, yes.
Yes. So my company, Distrify, does sell stuff direct, albeit on behalf of rights holders. Shopify acts as a conduit for sales, doesn't it? So it's a bit different.
It's a software service,
and it's, you know, you're effectively buying the
yes, if you sell a digital good, you from a person who uses Shopify, then the vendor, the merchant, is liable for this particular ruling.
So I'm going to do my best here to try and explain what's happening with the EU VAT rules for those of you who are unaware of the situation. And Keir, you can obviously chime in if I get something wrong. You schooled me on the subject yesterday. Since then, we've been doing a lot of research. But basically, The rules now state as of January 1st, and there's lots of caveats, and there's lots of stuff, so you have to actually go to the site and read, you know, the site will link up and read the actual details yourself to see how it applies to your business. But effectively, as of January 1st, you will be required to charge VAT in line with the location where the user is buying your product, correct?
Yes.
So the VAT rate has to be for the country that they are currently in.
Exactly.
Now, this poses a lot of problems.
The place of supply, effectively.
The place of supply, yes. I mean, actually, we went through this in more detail, and it's actually the place of consumption, which is very complicated for us because we sell video, and you don't have to watch it immediately. You could buy it, but not watch it. So you could cross a border before consuming it. But that aside, presume that they're consuming it at the point of purchase because we don't have any other point of reference. But the because obviously we charge them before they consume it. But anyway, the issue here is that there is a lot of requirement for evidence around this particular issue. So evidence as to where they are in the world when they purchased, or where they are in Europe when they purchased. And this is proving quite difficult for a lot of people to technically implement, because it does seem that the EU haven't really thought about the technical implementation before producing these guidelines. So it appears that you need to provide, if you're like most people selling a digital goods, so let's say you're selling an ebook or a video or music, you're going to need to collect two pieces of evidence, which is verifiable and non-contradictory evidence, to confirm where the user is when they purchase the good.
The good? Yes, the
goods.
The e-service.
So, but that's only part of the puzzle. So that's what companies who are VAT registered and have and sell goods have to do. But there's another piece of the puzzle, which is that if you are selling with, say, Shopify or another service like Shopify, and you are selling direct, you have to now register for VAT. Whatever your turnover, basically.
Yeah.
So, because of the new rules where you have to charge VAT at a certain rate, whatever country they're in, you have to be VAT registered whether you're turning over £300 a year or £300,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. And I think the reason for that is that some European countries have zero thresholds and things like
that. Yes, exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. So this is very problematic, and people like Rachel Andrew have written really good posts about this. I mean, she's written several. But there are serious concerns here about how this is making things sort of uncompetitive for startups, and how big companies are going to be able to throw cash at doing this, and lawyers and accountants to solve the problems, but the startups are not going to be able to do that. And she sort of goes through here saying that if you're just a normal merchant, let's say you sell an ebook, you're not going to be able to use PayPal add to cart buttons on your homepage. You're not going to be able to use Pay with Stripe without rolling your own system for collecting the evidence. It's not clear whether you need to collect billing address for the user, even though you're not actually, shipping anything to them. You might have to collect their address. Does the country of origin from the card provider, is that enough? Is a geo lookup on an IP verifiable? Because obviously, the technical people amongst you will know that someone could easily proxy through anything and pretend they're in Luxembourg, for example, which has a much lower rate of VAT. So this is extremely problematic if you do selling online in any way, especially digital selling online, and is potentially going to bring a lot of unneeded bureaucracy to the process. There's also another service that people seem to be confused about, which is called Moss, I believe. Is that right, Keir?
Yes, the multi one-stop shop.
Yeah. And this is, some people think this is going to solve the problem. This is, you just register for Moss and it fixes it. But actually, having done more research into Moss, that's not the case. And Moss is simply the service you use to file your VAT for European countries, and then they sort out where the money goes.
They're the redistribution agency, effectively, for your collected VAT from all EU states. I think there's a lot of confusion as well, reading some of the forums about this, about if you are, and again, there's an article, I think Rachel links this up from her GitHub Pages site, where it states that even companies overseas selling digital goods into the EU are supposed to charge VAT. But it's a ruling that came in something like 2003, but has never been strictly enforced. Right. So I'm really not sure where that leaves, companies that are effectively act as the reseller, and you get a royalty, such as your Gumroads and that kind of thing, where that affects them selling into Europe. But I think the technology for selling digital goods is clearly there. You can certainly with Shopify, you can do all the tax overrides. You can set up taxes on a per product basis for different countries, environments, that kind of thing.
Regions.
But the regions. Yeah, the problem comes is with this verifiable evidence. And so you can verify that someone is in Germany, and you can see that their billing address is in the UK. Mm. What happens then? I mean, how do you get that second piece of corroborative evidence to prove that that person is should be charged the German VAT rate.
This is the vague piece of the puzzle, and I think that this no one's going to have the answer to this question. And you know, talking to the people I've talked to where I work, and taking some advice on the subject, I think that there's going to be different companies going to deal with this in different ways. And it's sort of a suck it and see thing when the first return comes round in 2015. There are accountants out there who have access to forums that are supplied by the HMRC for them to ask specific questions because they're VAT advisors.
Mm.
And I've read stuff online where they've been asking questions about this and not getting replies that are... the replies contradict one another, basically. So it's, I think what's going to end up happening is different companies are going to implement different systems, whether it be, you know, a GOIP lookup plus take the card, you know the location of the bank, of the issuing bank for the card, and if they if those two match, then the sale can go ahead. The problem seems to be is that everybody's fallback plan is to ask the user to confirm. Now, that doesn't seem to be good enough for the EU based on their guidelines. They're saying that that's not verifiable. They could be lying.
Mm.
So, you know, I think that to a certain extent, it's going to be about you're not going to have to follow the guidelines to the letter of the as it were, but that you're going to have to prove that you've done your utmost to verify this information. And if you can say, well, we've done X, and then we did Y, and then we did Z, and you know, and we feel we can't be expected to do more than that, then it's whether the HMRC accepts that or not.
I guess it's as well. It's like if you got the IP, even if and you assume it's not proxied.
Yep.
But
this is a technical implementation issue, isn't it?
Yeah,
and which HMRC do not seem to care about. You know, I have seen stuff on forums where people have said, "What about proxying?" And the HMRC don't seem to reply to that.
It's just I mean, I'm not the most technologically advanced person in the world, but I can't conceptually conceive how you even getting things like GRP lookups or, and then marrying that up to, say, using an implementation like Stripe, where you can then intersect, you get the token back or whatever you, however you described it, and then that gives you the country of registration for that particular card that's being
for the bank, for the bank, the issuing bank,
and then you then have to, you know, if they don't match up, and you need that second piece, and in some circumstances, third piece of corroborative evidence. How else, you know, without human intervention, which seemingly they don't want to take, can you ascertain where that person is and which VAT to charge? I mean, I just
you can't. Well, to me, with my my technical knowledge at that point, I don't know, and that's the problem. I think that's what most people are running up against, is that there is a point here where you have to say, we believe we are doing all we can based on our technical knowledge and our understanding to fulfill these requirements. And, you know, I think the worst thing that people can do is just ignore it.
Yes.
If you ignore it and say, well, we can't do anything about this, it's stupid, we can't do a GOIP lookup because they could be proxied, so why bother? Well, I think you need to do that, because at least then you can say to the HMRC, look, we're trying to do this, we're trying to follow your guidelines. It's your guidelines are broken, but we are doing our utmost to make this work.
I think for me, it's
I think if you have, you know, there's a Sendowl article, which again we can link to, which says that they're having sort of 3% of those people aren't marrying up with
So explain their scenario, because they're a bit like
they're like you.
Are they though?
They're like Shopify, yeah. That's how they explain it in their blog anyway. They say that they're selling on behalf of other people, but they're still liable to collect the evidence.
So as a platform, they need to collect the evidence effectively for their users.
Yes. So what they're... and again, I think that's probably their decision that they've made in order to show the HMRC that they're attempting to be compliant.
Mm.
But what they're saying is that they're handing over that bit of the task to their user. To the person who's selling through them. So what happens is they take the IP, they get the bank's issuing address. If those two things don't match, they then email the seller, effectively, saying, you've had someone whose details haven't matched, please chase them up and get evidence and supply it, or get evidence for your records. And then that is then the seller's problem.
Right, so they're passing that over to... So their recommendation there is that you would then email them and say, could you confirm... I mean,
could
what,
you supply evidence?
Photocopy? I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's rubbish, isn't it? I mean, that's the truth of it. The truth of it is, if I'm sitting in a cafe in Paris and I want to buy a film and I buy a film and then I get an email 2 weeks later saying, we couldn't verify that you were actually in Paris. Can you please provide evidence for the fact you were in Paris? You know, what are we going to get into? A photocopy of a train ticket? You know, I mean, it's sort of... I think that there is going to have to be some amends to these rules because it's just not going to be viable. And I think, you know, having talked to a bunch of people, the general feeling seems to be that if the numbers of things that don't match are that low, you know, if they are 3% or whatever Sendowl are saying theirs are, I mean, obviously that's going to depend on the type of business you are.
Mm.
Then the HMRC have very little to actually argue about because for 97% of your transactions, you're doing everything you can.
Yes, for Sendowl, funnily enough, I've also posted another article since we discussed this called on December 5th called New EU VAT Rules. And this is a follow-up and it goes into a lot of detail and it shows how they're implementing it. And you're absolutely right. They say they never touch the money. They're merely the conduit. So in that respect, it is very, very similar to platforms like Shopify. Yeah. Obviously, it's slightly different for us because we sell physical goods as well. So it becomes a bit more of a minefield.
Yes, it does, yeah. And in fact, and what's going to happen is most of your people, your customers will have to become VAT registered.
But also, obviously, all of the digital delivery services are third-party plugins effectively as well. So it's even more complicated.
Yes,
because effectively a storefront, not a sort of
yeah. So you are both you're both selling digital goods, and you'll be the conduit.
Yeah. So yes, I think from a merchant perspective, they're absolutely from a sort of company perspective, it's absolutely fine. It's more to do with the that they've got that covered. It's more to do with the
well, they're fine because they're in Canada.
Yeah. Well, allegedly. but that's what we've been told. But yes, I definitely recommend Sendowl's blog. That's one of the most sort of comprehensive outlines of how.
Albeit from a very specific perspective, you need to be careful there because if you could read this, think you're fine, but actually they are a conduit for sales, not actually selling stuff.
Absolutely,
direct.
Absolutely. So, but also,
Rachel Andrew is. Yeah. I think hers is the best if you're actually selling stuff direct.
Yeah.
Because that's her situation.
Yeah, she's written quite extensively on that, so definitely check out her.
But her don't articles. Ignore it, people.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there'll be a test case and then it'll be a case of seeing what happens. You know, it'll be quite quite interesting to see how long it lasts. But we shall see.
Yeah, you're right.
But on a lighter note, if I may, just two very, very quick links, one each here. There's a company called Liberio, I think you say. It's another IO. I hope Neil has been...
Duly informed,
the internet overlord. And this is it's a service for creating ebooks, which used to be kind of a dark art, but this allows you to use things like Google Drive and create docs and then just seamlessly turn them into ebooks. It's got an extension that plugs in very, very nicely. But they've gone one stage further. And actually, if you want to know a little bit more about the background to the company, there's a great interview on Smashing Mag with the founder, which I'll drop into the show notes as well. Mm-hmm. But
maybe an ISBN.
Yeah, so for I think it's $29. This is called Ebook to Go. Excuse me. They will give you your personal ISBN, which if anyone's ever tried to get one, that is a dark art, definitely.
And that's a bargain price for an ISBN.
Very much so. Yeah. So you get your ISBN number. You'll get the ability to remove the Liberio branding on the ebook and the mini site. You also can sell your ebook wherever you like. There's no royalties or anything like that. And then on top of that, they give you a mini site. So you'll be able to link to your sales happening on sites like iBooks, Amazon, and so forth. So I think this is kind of a very, very neat package. And I think this is something that, as long as you sell it through those third-party sites and you get around the VAT issue, is I mean, it's silly money, $29. It's probably like £18-19, something like that in you know, the Queen's money. And it just seems, you know, an obvious extension. I'm surprised someone hasn't made it this simple before. But I think
it's interesting, isn't it? Because the thing here is it's not tied to any platform.
Yeah, it's agnostic
in
that respect.
This is the thing that's exciting about this, because you know, in the past, lots of people are, you know, you get, you know, I mean, things like the mini site are always trying to keep you, you know, keep you within their ecosystem or whatever. But they're clearly not trying to, like, you know, say that there's going to be anything tying you to using them in the future, or there's no subscription, or it's just, you know, you've got a book, you want to sell it online, you pay $29, done.
Yeah.
You know, a student could afford this, a student written their PhD, anything, they could just turn into an ebook like that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Really, really good.
I think I had a quick try in Google Docs and it was great. It was so easy. Really, really,
will
really
nice.
Will
you be utilizing this? I know you have aspirations of a book.
Yeah, I think I would. I think this would take, I mean, certainly in some of the Shopify work, we're thinking of doing some ebooks, and it's one of those things where, you know, if someone's willing, I mean, you don't have to do the $29 service,
no,
right? You can just do whatever, you can just do it. It's absolutely.
But for an ISBN, for goodness sake, you know, yeah. They even said here themselves, an ISBN's normally around $100. I had in my head that they were £80.
Yes, that's about right, yeah.
So yeah. Honestly, that's, you know, and they got Stripe integration on the mini site, you know.
Yeah.
This is incredible for $29, you know, that people should be all over this.
I think it's great. You know, the internet has democratized publishing, but I still think there's a place for print, obviously, but also things like ebooks and that. You see more and more people reading Kindles and that kind of thing when you travel about now. And I think it would be, certainly if you're drafting and creating your product in Google Drive, which a lot of people do, then this is an obvious extension.
Yes,
lot of the formatting, once you dig deeper into Google Drive or Google Docs, as was, you know, it's quite nice. You know, a lot of the outlining and the ways that you can use some of the sort of natural hierarchies and things like that, and the ability to put in images and all that kind of stuff, works really well. And you know, if you want to sell a $10 EPUB, I think this would be the way to go. Three sales and you're done. You know, you've covered your costs. And I think it's a real sort of innovation. And maybe this was places where, although I didn't quite get that impression, something like editorially may have wanted to go, where become a sort of platform, but maybe not. Maybe it was more about the collaboration, where this is utilizing a collaborative tool already in existence, such as Google Drive, and then sort of building on top of it for, you know, publishing, which I think is very, very, very clever.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah,
that's actually quite exciting.
Yeah, I think so. So, I'll put that in the show notes, and I'll also link up the article, the interview on Smashing Magazine, because that gives a bit of background to sort of the motivation for starting the company as well.
Cool.
What's your last one, sir?
My last one is quite interesting. I discovered it because there were a lot of people being very cynical about it online, and I was a bit irritated by people saying, oh, just exactly what we need, another chat app. So I thought I'll try it because people were being cynical about it. And it's from a former founder of Skype, apparently.
Yes, that's right, yes.
It's called Wire. Someone must have paid a fortune for the domain wire.com.
Wire.com, can you imagine?
Yep, it's mobile, secure, synced. Apparently, so you can be on different devices at the same time, just like Skype, and you see the messages appearing. It's chat and voice, and on mobile, it looks pretty pretty, in my opinion.
It does, yeah.
On but having used it on the Mac
on your personal computer, your desktop
on my personal
device.
Computer,
yes.
On my PS1 IBM, I'm not that impressed.
Yeah.
So I was a bit frustrated that these people were all being sarky about it, and I wanted to be able to tweet, you know, actually I've used it and it completely obliterates Skype or something like that. But actually, when I used it, I was a little frustrated. The voice call was fine, but the usability is poor. It's very hard to work out exactly how to call someone. It's quite difficult. The following process isn't natural. Your avatar is constantly in the background of your chat on the mobile version, which is pretty distracting to have your face behind the text.
Yeah, I mean, who wants to look at a picture of themselves, right? I mean,
no, exactly. And just the way it was that I was just constantly typing over my beard. I hope that there's some, you know, it does look beautifully designed. You know, I even thought when I saw it, it looked like a Mike Coos joint. The way that it's designed.
Maybe it was.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it was. But the actual app's quite difficult to actually use. While the design's good, I don't know if that makes sense really, but if the design feels well designed, but then when I'm actually using it, the usability feels poor.
Yeah, there are a few little touches that I didn't quite understand, like just little things like having a line to denote where the sort of typing box was. It's all very kind of, once you know it's there, but it's not necessarily that clear.
It's not intuitive at all.
Yeah. I think, again, like you, I think I Skyped you to say, have you seen this? And you said, oh, funnily enough, it's one of my links. But yeah, it does feel... I think, you know, a point release will probably tidy up a lot of this. But, yeah, I'm not really sure where these kind of these apps want to go. You know, is it another social network? Is it just a comms tool? What is it? You know, I'm not really sure, to be honest.
I mean, I think, you know, this is something I've talked about at great length with my colleagues and with you and stuff. And I think a lot of these, you know, a lot of these apps are purely designed to be flipped and sold and let's move on. You know, make it look really nice. Get a bit of buzz going around it. Someone like Yahoo will offer you a lot of money to get that cool.
Mm.
I think that's, you know, I don't know if this is what this is doing particularly, but it's you know, it needs more polish is the truth. Of the matter, and it's a very early release, and maybe that'll happen. And actually, the Skype course, ironic. It's like saying Hoover when you're actually using a Dyson.
Yes.
The voice calls that I've had using it have been extremely clear and haven't broken up or anything like that. But that is really the norm with Skype now, anyway. Like, people used to bitch that Skype was almost, you know, unusable, but in terms of, you know, voice calls. But as bandwidth's got better and Skype's got better, that's not really the case anymore. And we're doing this over Skype right now, and I've not noticed any difference to a normal conversation. In fact, it's better than using my mobile phone often.
Yes, no, that's very true. It's very true. Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye on it, maybe try it. It's one of those things, though, I certainly know from my own experience, you've kind of got one opportunity to grab me, and then it will take something, you know, a big recommendation or a big kind of...
Well, it's one of those things where, like, if I give it a second
chance, you know.
If I'd installed it and there had been 20 people that I knew already on it, then I would have gone, bosh, let's use this, let's try it for a week. But the problem is that I have to entice people away from Skype onto it in order to try it.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And it's difficult, yeah.
I think of app.net all over again.
Yes, exactly.
We need an app that will post to Wire and Skype and Twitter and app and everything else. And there wasn't that path. Yeah. Anyways, I digress. Yes, so where can they find that? Wire.com, as you say.
Wire.com, yeah.
You can see where the money's gone there.
Beautiful design.
It is
lovely.
But,
you know, let's...
I keep an eye on it. I think it does show promise, I must admit.
They're controversially using the hamburger for their menu.
Is that controversial these
which
days?
Which, of course, has... Well, it's dropped out of usage, hasn't it? Or it's become controversial after being the norm. Oh. I see that you have gone for the menu button, like a lot of people have. And
I just wrote menu because that's what it is, you know.
Yeah, that's the new accepted thing to do, apparently.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Well, because nobody outside the web industry knows what three lines means.
Three lines on a shirt. No, that's something totally different. Anyways.
That is something very different.
Yeah.
That no one outside of England will get.
England.
Anyway.
Yes, so why.com, check it out. We shall be back next up with the BAFTAs. This is very exciting. It did run long last time, over an hour of banter.
So make sure that you've got your movie snacks, as my wife would say.
Movie snacks, the American cultural influence that is your wife. And comfy slippers, maybe a
glass of red wine,
a scotch with lots of ice,
or no ice if you're civilized.
It's all very exciting. There are no prizes, just the prestige.
Yes, indeed.
Of being nominated,
the boasting rights,
and
do nominations or do we just go for winners? I think we just go for winners. Yeah,
we won't say always. We've only done it once, but
everyone's a winner.
Neil Knish will not be winning anything this year, just for the record. I think just we should record, decree that. Yeah.
I think that's fair. He was a multi-award winning last year, and
the fact that he sort of roams around Shropshire or wherever he lives in his long internet cape. Overlording all connectivity is enough, I think.
I think that's fair, yeah.
I'm sure he'll be very upset about
it. He'll be delighted that he won't get any comments.
Yeah, well, we should do the Internet Overlord Award.
We should.
For being the best Internet Overlord. Anyways.
Well, there might not be nominated for that.
Yeah, I think there's only one winner. But anyways, as always, thank you for listening. Hopefully we've not made you cry into your keyboards with the VAT situation. It's we'll keep an eye on that, actually, because I do think it's tech's exciting, but VAT's even more so. Hopefully come January it'll all fall into disarray and the governments of Europe will change their minds.
Hooray.
You never know. That was episode 35. Thank you for listening, and join us for episode 36 for the BAFTAs. Cheers.